I don't know what that is. I guess we're still on Thursday the 29th.
It's Thursday the 29th.
Hi, welcome to Colin's Screaming Argonauts. I'm Max.
I'm the Fabulous Penguin.
And with us today is John from upstate New York. And we're going to have a conversation. Oh, we're just two guys talking to anyone about everything. We're published by Internet Sampler Productions.
Ape your sampler.
Oh, my God.
I tell you, we have to retrain you every single week. You're like a freaking monkey with a bunch of bananas.
No, but monkeys always eat the bananas. I seem to get it wrong. Baby, check this out. Hi, welcome to Colin's Screaming Argonauts. Today is Thursday, January the 29th.
2009.
This is episode 77, and we are produced by Ape Beer Sampler Productions for internet consumption. I'm Max.
I'm the Fabulous Penguin.
And we're joined today by John from New York. Welcome, John.
Thanks. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're not doing too good.
Apparently, one of us has been drinking heavily.
No, you know what? I have not had an ounce. Obviously, the problem is that I haven't been drinking.
Maybe that's it.
If people don't know what we're talking about. We have had a few technical difficulties, not a few shots. While starting the show, and I shouldn't say we, one of us has been having a few difficulties, but here we are. We're going to talk about internet consumption today.
Well, John is our InterTubes webmaster expert.
John is our Ted Stevens expert.
He's our Ted Stevens expert.
John knows everything there is to know about every aspect of the internet, and we're pleased as punch that we can have him.
And I'm sure he walks around with one of those T-shirts that says, "I am not going to fix your computer."
Oh, I'm tempted to.
Do you get a lot of people asking you to fix their computers?
Well, that's one of the benefits of switching to a Mac.
Oh, that's right.
I don't do PC anymore.
Don't do PC anymore. You're no longer politically correct. I still can't believe that thing. I was listening to the last show just tonight. Denali was saying about, or was it you, Penguin, that George Bush and Barack Obama, and Bush was the Mac and Obama was the PC?
Right.
I just find that troubling.
You find it troubling?
Yes, because the hip guy is the Mac guy.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the point of the joke. I think the point of the joke was that Barack is so into his...
Yes.
BlackBerry, and he's so into the internet, and he's so into YouTube and all that other stuff. And those things tend to be PC-driven.
You have to be technologically sophisticated to use them, whereas Mac is simple enough for George Bush to use it.
Even George Bush could use a Mac.
Bush is more of an adjective.
So, we have John with us, and it was at my spurring that we got you on, John, because I really enjoy your website, and it raised a lot of issues for me, not negatively. I mean, it just makes me think of a lot of issues, and I just want to know if you'd be willing to chat about some of those things.
Why don't we give the name of the website, first of all, as long as we're promoting things?
We might as well.
My family loves it.
MyFamilyLovesIt.com. Yep. And it's sort of like a combination of a family blog and a consumer reports for kids things, right? To me, that's how it comes across. I mean, you guys test products. And
they have contests, and they also
– contests and make recommendations about stuff. But there's also just a really nice piece where they – invite you into their lives. I mean, with great pictures of the kids and stories about – hockey injuries and sledding and the chicken in the snow.
And John's also one of these guys that builds things, and he posts on the blog how to build it, how to make a hockey rink, how to build a bunk bed set. And people come to his webpage to find out how to do stuff.
Which I think is pretty cool.
I always hate those guys that can make things out of stuff.
I love people like that. I love people who can work with their hands because I can't. And so to me, it's like, you know, something special. That's what my dad was like that. I mean, my dad was great with his hands.
Yeah, mine too.
My
dad used to build furniture.
Right.
After I got it from my
dad. I got none of that stuff.
He started out kind of like the same way I am. I'm more of like a construction guy right now. I'm not really a fine artist. So, like, I have plans up there for a platform bed. And the thing probably weighs about 200 pounds. It's all construction lumber.
And it's all built with lag bolts and lock washers.
it's never going to come apart. So yeah. It's not the most pretty thing.
It's not going anywhere. Except maybe making your floor warped with all the weight of it. Well, I guess the first question I have is I wanted to know, when you guys were kind of like coming up with this idea for this website, did you and your wife and your kids even talk about what it was going to be like to be sharing a really, really big part of your life with, like, everybody?
Yeah, it started. So I've been blogging for about 10 years now. You know, before it was really called blogging, I just kind of started a journal, and I'll just do that before we had any kids. And I would, you know, just whatever topic I thought of, you know, I would put up there. And when we started having kids,
right,
I'd put some posts up, but I kept them pretty anonymous. And then when we started, I just moved the site to a new platform, transferring over my entries, I found that the family ones really kind of meant something to me. You know, it seemed like a diary.
Right.
In that way. And we started seeing mommy blogs pop up. And one issue we had is you see a lot of them that are kind of snarky or a little cynical about parenting. We want something a little more, you know, focused on the positive.
Upbeat.
And we did have a discussion about how public to make it. And I think that's something that's changed a lot in the last few years. You know, maybe 5 years ago, I don't think we would have done it, but now there's so many out there that if we put our information out there, it's just kind of lost in the sea. So we felt a little more comfortable about doing it.
Sure.
But we still kind of, we try not to put specifics. We're definitely conscious of what we put out there.
You don't publish your address or your phone number.
Right.
Right. Like if we put a picture up that maybe says the location we're at, we'll fuzz that out.
Well, it was interesting you say that. I mean, you say that you started anonymous, with a sort of an anonymous feel, and that's changed over time. You know, Max and I have had lots and lots of discussions about what I, for lack of a better word, we'll call them internet stories. You know, internet stories about, you know, a guy whose picture is on Facebook and he goes for a job and they look at his Facebook page and because of that they end up not giving him the job, or kids who have gotten in trouble because they've posted pictures on their Facebook pages and stuff like that. And so to me that's a real issue for kids.
I think it's kind of down into two questions. The first is general publicity questions. Yeah. You know, do you want to have your face out there at all? And the second is more about what kind of things are too dumb. We do this thing, as you know, called Dumb Not So Dumb and Brian's Rules of Social Dynamics. And a lot of the stuff we do is about some schmuck who put something that he really should have known better out on the internet without quite connecting to the idea that it's published and all the world can see it forever. But the first question is about how your approach to being a positive internet presence. I'm looking at your website right now, and I would almost think this is something you could, I shouldn't hesitate to say this, use on a job interview. You can say, you know, this is me, this is quality of my work, and this is my family. It's all wholesome and charming, and you can actually use it to your advantage.
Well, that's something that with my old website I came across, where one time I did publish a story about Wirtz, and people from work saw it, and it wasn't something that really reflected negatively on me, but it was a little bit eye-opening that there's certain things I'm not going to put out there.
Would you care to tell us about what those were?
That was the story about before our Christmas buffet that
yeah, that's what I thought.
My tube mate and I went into the bathroom, and we noticed that someone else in our department did not wash their hands after coming out of the stall, and we made sure. We went to the buffet, we got in line ahead of him. And some of our coworkers,
I would say, yeah. I would hope so.
About it.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting one.
Ramifications to what you publish out there. You know, unfortunately for me, I haven't had to go look for a job lately, but, you know, if people go looking for me and find my blog, I wonder, you know, if I could, because it's out there now. I mean, and I didn't think about it. I'm probably as dumb as most of the dumbs on there. Suppose somebody doesn't like my politics, and
well, I was just going to say, Max. I mean, that would be the crux for you. I mean, we don't see it on John's website because it's kind of like a wholesome family website. Well,
yeah, some harsh
no, but with you, I mean, you're expressing.
Actually, believe it or not, I hold back sometimes on right. things I say. And I've run into that thought too, where, in fact, this time last year I was fuming about what was going on at work, and I made some veiled references to it. But I just knew that people knew that I had a blog. I didn't know if anybody was reading it, but I knew that anything that I published had the potential to get back to people at work, and I didn't want to say something that I was going to have to live down later.
Right. Well, listen, now, so we're talking about seeing things on the internet, seeing a blog or whatever. John, one of the things that I also wanted to talk to you about was the whole idea of how you handle your own kids in terms of the internet. Now, your kids are really young.
That stage yet, but it's something I'm starting to think about because I know it's going to be coming soon.
It's going to happen fast, too.
Yeah.
Right. It does, you know.
Oh, God, there's this internet out there, and I've got to protect my kids from it, Penguin?
Well, I don't think I ever said I have to protect my kids from it. I'll be honest with you. You know, my wife and I talked it through when we got internet access and started to let the kids get involved a little bit. And we set up some rules that the kids had to follow, like they were not allowed to. Originally, they didn't have their own computers. They only had the one computer in the computer room. And so, you know, the rules were that the computer screen always faced the door, so you could walk by and just kind of peek in and see what they were looking at. That was one thing. And the other thing was they couldn't have the door closed, that, you know, those sorts of things. And we also just in general would talk with them about what they were looking at or what they were doing. But, you know, as they get older and as they got their own computers and
control of their life, and you're going to have less influence. But there's still
absolutely
it happened. Some of these stories we did, the teachers talking about MySpace pages, it happens with people that are in their 40s and 50s too.
Oh sure, absolutely. You know, you remember right. that story that we did about the teachers who got in trouble for stuff they posted on Facebook. You know, there was that. It was also that story about the woman who was applying for a graduate program, and one of the things that the admissions committee did was look at her Facebook page, and there was a picture of her in a pirate hat drinking a beer. And based on that, they didn't accept her into the program.
A pirate hat and beer?
So, I mean, those things are out there. I mean, they are.
I didn't even knew that it was beer. I think the photo was called.
Yeah, basically. I saw the photo.
No, it was beer.
Boy, that.
But it was at a party, and it did
Wouldn't
say.
Wouldn't you like to see the MySpace page?
The caption for it was
the true MySpace page of the people.
And she looked.
The real John Boehner.
I'm not sure you could see that.
That's true.
I think I'd want to rip
an article
my eyes
here,
out.
Some of this mountainous stuff that we printed out about this teacher had some kid had accidentally hit a pop-up, a virus actually, where all these porn.
Oh
pop-ups.
Yeah, that's the porn storm.
Yeah, they took the woman's job away. And then they had a forensic computer person come in and say, no, this is
right.
This is really likely, not only plausible, but likely that she had nothing to do with it.
Right. Plus, they also said that they had cleaned the computers and stuff and had put pop-up blockers and stuff on, and then they found out that they were done after the fact. So it got out of the realm of what she actually did and kind of got into the realm of were they trying to frame her for some reason and what was that reason?
The woman was given a small fine, but she still has lost her license. She didn't have to serve any jail time and, you know, only had to pay $28 or something. I forget what it was. But it's a dangerous thing. I guess I didn't realize quite how dangerous it was to have an internet presence.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's dangerous, but at the same time, it's fascinating. You know, I mean, you know, Max, you and I in the Chronicles that we recorded earlier today, talking about the 10 greatest inventions, number one was the computer and number six was the internet. And, you know, when you start thinking about it, you know, one of the things that I've seen is how it seems as if the internet is beginning to eliminate like this urban bias that's around. You know, kids who are born or sort of street smarts, city kids versus these you know, suburban or rural kids. Urban. You know, I mean, I grew up in New York City, so I kind
of
tend to think
of
myself
urbane.
As being, and I'm not, and I'm not patting myself on the back. I mean, but my kids were born and raised in a small town. And I think that would normally have come with a lot of biases, but because of their internet exposure, neither one of them would I call,
you know,
backward or naive bumpkins or anything of that sort.
I have a theory.
So I mean, there's been a real positive to the internet for them too.
Laws. I'm thinking about now the idea of charging people with felonies, kids with felonies. You've seen some of the stories, you know, kids doing horrible things, and sometimes intentionally and sometimes knowing that they can't be charged as adults. When those laws were written, the United States was 80% rural, and an 18-year-old was barely sophisticated.
Right.
But there's so much information coming at kids at such a young age, and even a ton more now with the internet, that your average 16-year-old is more sophisticated than their 36-year-old dad.
Sure.
So I think the idea that someone at 18 is still naive is a naive notion. Well, he may
well
not
I
be
know
smarter,
that my 19-year-old son thinks he's
he
a lot smarter than
Ted
his 53-year-old dad.
Well, I think that's part of the problem is that I think some parents tutor and have that technophobia and don't know as much and just kind of leave it to the kids since the kids know how to work that thing.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to understand, you know, what the risks are and stuff and trying to teach them, just some advice about it, which is basically the advice for the computer is just the same as
life,
you know,
advice.
The kid to the mall and stuff. But because it's in the house, there's this false sense of security.
And because the parents are more technologically naive than the kids they're teaching. That's an interesting point. There's almost like shifting plates that you got this kid who's very sophisticated technologically and not maybe socially as sophisticated, and you got this parent who's much more sophisticated in the ways of human beings and more socially more technologically naive, and they're kind of going past each other in both directions.
And I think the problem is that some of these parents just kind of take a hands-off approach. It's like program the VCR.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'll just ask him to do it.
Yeah.
Or the kid do it. And with the computer, they just, you know, don't take any part of it because they don't know how to work that.
Penguin has this theory. I'm not sure whether it's your own or you got it somewhere, but it's the theory about each generation.
No, that's actually mine. It really is.
Bring that up again, because
each generation has three types of technologies for them. They have the technology that they grew up with that is a intimate part of their lives. They have the technology that develops during their lives, and they, in some way, shape, or form, learn enough about it to become at least proficient. And then you have some technologies that they never will get. And no matter where you go, you know, like I think about my dad. You know, for my dad, the technology was television. I mean, he never had television until he was almost an adult. So that wasn't a big part of his life, whereas my life, the television was always there. My kids, they're moving beyond television. You know, right now, my guys, you know, download television shows from the internet and watch them on their computers at their own beck and call. You know, so each of these generations has this, you know, for us, Max, for yours and my generation, John, probably for yours too, the computer, I think, is probably it. Computers weren't around when we were born. We were adults when they became at least popular enough that many people had them, or, you know, to the point now where everybody has one, or almost everybody does. But we've become technically sufficiently educated about them, we can do it. But, I mean, I have trouble with the DVR. You know, I don't have trouble with the laptop.
Yeah, just on the other side of that dividing line, because you were educated in computers. And did you have computers in your school when you were growing up?
Actually, well, yeah, me started with my dad was a math professor and took computer classes back in the early 80s. And we started with a TRS-80 in the house, probably about 81 or 82. And so my brother and I were playing on that computer real early on.
Yeah. So it's almost always been there for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember.
Well, it's funny. One of those images that I will never, ever forget is College Boy as a three-year-old, literally standing on a chair at the computer. I had a 386 PC Junior playing some game. I don't even remember what game it was, but he literally was standing on a chair, moving the mouse around and doing stuff. He was 3 years old, you know. So for him, he doesn't know a life without
the technology.
A computer. He doesn't know a life without
a child's generation. They
a DVR
to be there because it was always there. That's the way I've heard it.
Yeah, I was telling Scheimer today that my latest kind of generation shock was
right.
Last night, my six-year-old, we gave him our old point-and-shoot digital camera, and he was playing around with it, and it came up to me, and he's like, Dad, I have these pictures on here. Is there some way I can put them on paper? And just the thought of photo prints to him was kind of foreign, because so much is just digital now.
Yeah, mention the word typewriter to him and see if he gives you a funny look.
See the look he gives you. And well, you know, I used to teach computer classes to in an adult ed school program, and I used to tell them that if I had a computer when I was in college, I would have been a straight A student, because that's how I work best. And typing papers out on a IBM Selectric was not my way. Because I'd discover things that I'd want to put in the paper, and I would look at it, and I would say, I'm not going to retype this 8-page paper to add this one great idea. Whereas if I had a computer, it would have taken 30 seconds, and it would have been in there, it would have gone from a C+ to an A. And that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
For the courses that are available this semester, the continuing ed stuff, it's outrageous. They put out a call saying, you know, anybody that can teach anything, you know, if you want to teach it, come on and you can, you know, make yourself a little extra money at the community college. And some of the things that they're teaching are reasonable. Like, I just picked up the flyer. Make homemade pasta. The wines of Italy. That's fine. But they also have psychic development workshop at college. How to see auras. Connecting with the other side. Somebody in my community who's getting paid to teach connecting with auras at the community college, contacting your spirit guide and angels. They're teaching how to contact angels at the community college. You know, I mean, any kind of schlep. I was looking at this. I couldn't pull it off. The kind of stuff I could make up, you know, I'd like to think it'd be better, but, you know.
Wouldn't be as good as the stuff that's actually there, would it?
Well, yeah, but that would be serious social science.
Well, you could teach a course,
I'm
Max, in, like, hating George Bush.
I'm talking about feeling the top of my bald head and getting, you know, cranial inspiration nodes or something. You know, just total bullshit. Reading the bumps on my noggin. You know?
Reading the bumps on your head, sure.
Here's another one. A Course in Miracles.
I don't know what you're complaining about. It sounds like a nice way to make a few extra bucks.
You know, this is stuff they're teaching at college. Seeing the sacred along the way. Learn to meditate. Chakra clearing and balancing. All right, meditate, I'll give you. I'll even give you Middle East dancing.
Well, what's wrong? There's nothing wrong with learning to meditate,
I'm
do you think?
Belly dancing. Some of this stuff is just out there.
Well, you know, and kind of bringing that back to what we've been talking about, there's the internet influence right there. I mean, you remember how – well, you and I had this discussion a ways back when we were talking about how life is different nowadays when you see something that you don't understand, you can look it up on the internet versus having to go to the library or go to the Encyclopedia Britannica in the hopes that it might or, you know, might be there.
I'm kind of torn on that about, on the one hand, I can't imagine living without it, be able to look up all the information. But on the other hand, I just don't know what effect that's going to have on people where you don't need to remember anything anymore.
Yeah, Penguin, we were talking about this too. What do you suppose that the brain of a child on Google it grows up differently than the brain of a child in a book? You know, it's kind of an extension of what we were talking about before.
Well, it has to be somewhat.
And I think I've come up with a way to test it. Amish,
right?
Find a 6-year-old,
and that would be
starting
what?
Now. Watch him for 6 years. Let him.
Oh, okay, so you would compare
whatever, or a 12-year-old, and see, and maybe a group from each group, and see if.
You know what the problem with that would be, though?
Yeah, that's the problem with psychology.
There would be so many other. Influences in the Amish kids.
Strict control of variables. You can't morally do it.
Right, right. Just to add a note to what you were saying, one thing that I've heard, or let me rephrase that, some of the things that I've read about it are that there are people who feel that Google doesn't change it because you're still reading. You have to read Google. I mean, if you look something up, you want to. You know, so you have to read it, and so that part of your brain that's important for that type of development still gets developed. But I think what John said about the whole thing about not needing to remember, the only problem I have with that is that I went through high school and they taught me algebra and calculus, and I don't know why they did that because I didn't need to remember it then. I didn't remember it then. I don't remember it now. You know, so to me it doesn't matter. All that much. So I'm not sure that that's a bad thing. I mean, I'm one of those people, I believe that the toaster has, 10,000 pushes down on the button. And if you fool around with it and use a whole bunch of them up, it's just going to break earlier. I'm one of those people that believes that, that my brain has a capacity for the memory.
I think you might be near the limit right now.
And that at 53 years of age, I am taxing that reservoir. I believe that I am. And so I have to start forgetting things. I have to
get rid
so that
of
I have room to, if I'm going to remember that the Giants won the Super Bowl last January, something else has to go out. And if it happens to be my phone number or how to drive to work, then so be it. It has to be that.
Change their strategy. Like, for myself as a computer programmer, I don't need to memorize each language. I just kind of know how to program from going to school and from my experiences. And if I need to look something up, I just go on the internet. So how much do kids in school need to memorize, and how much do they need to just learn critical thought and problem solving?
And I'm, of course, I'm old-fashioned, but I'm of the school that you have to memorize. And Penguin, I'm going to tell you a story I was telling John earlier today. I spoke with a speech therapist whose job it was to rehabilitate a 3-year-old who had been almost entirely left alone for his entire life. And I asked her, will you be able to fix him? And her first answer was no. And she said, we'll be able to get him so that he's able to communicate. He'll never be facile with language. And his IQ is forever damaged. You need to engage with human beings. And there's certain windows of opportunity for learning things like language. And anyone can still learn a language, but it's much easier when you're 3 or 0.
As you're saying with the technologies of each generation, I kind of think this social networking is the one that I'm kind of on the tail end of, and I'm trying to comprehend the attraction to it. Because when I talk to my wife's brothers are in high school, and I talk to them about computers, they don't have the understanding that I do. They don't understand how a computer works. For them, it's all about
connecting, applying
it to things, the software and the social networking.
What about Twitter, John?
I still don't quite get it. I've been playing around with it. I think that's something. I think what, for me, it's more of a, it's basically like a different subscription model. You subscribe to people, hear what they're saying. I mean, I think your benefit, I assume your son uses it a lot. And all my friends my age, nobody's using it.
Yeah, no. But it's there. This, I think, and I find this ironic, the thing of their generation is text. They'd rather text somebody than call them.
Hell, they text. They're in the same room and then they're texting each other. I mean, that's not an exaggeration.
And you got to get on Twitter in order to find out what they're talking about.
Now, what are you working on right now? Because my supervisor's trying to find some new ways to get status reports, and we're exploring that. We're trying to figure out what tools out there, because there doesn't really seem to be a perfect answer for it.
For, like, measuring productivity, keeping track of...
Well, not even that, but... Well, no, this is more, you know, when we meet with them each week and give them status updates, and you know, we're doing it every other week, and I'm using Yammer each day, and I tag saying, you know, for this project, this is what I'm working on, he can get an instant update without bugging me.
Oh, so it's one-directional. You don't have to have a conversation.
Right, that's what we're trying to use it for, because our concern is that if we use it for conversation, basically it becomes like an instant messenger.
And it's actually a distraction rather than an efficiency.
Yeah, you get a lot of noise in there.
Well, that's the problem with instant messaging anyway. It's a lot of noise, and it's wonderfully distract. Maybe that's the dynamic, is it's a distraction versus a productivity tool.
Well, Twitter's blocked at work, but I found a few ways around it. You want to know.
All right, well, we'll just keep that between us and the audience on the argument. That's right. The award-winning podcast of record.
That and the several million listeners, countless screaming Argonauts.
All right, John.
I believe so.
Joining us, and we hope you're back.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure.
There it is.
As always, I'm honored to be on the podcast.
Absolutely, Max. Thanks for joining me.
Bye bye.
Shipwreck free, though I respect that a lot. I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming.